basically goes like this, and it has to do with the fact that what everybody is saying scientifically right now, particularly cosmologists and physicists, is that the universe cannot exist unless it was incredibly finely tuned.
The universe or Earth, like life on Earth?
The universe.
Okay.
Yeah. If the universe wasn't finely tuned, there would be no Earth.
Right.
So it's even so it goes even further back, and basically it works like this. It says the fine tuning of the universe for life can only be a result of physical necessity, chance, or design. Now, this proof is basically the notion that cosmologists, astrophysicists, leading thinkers have all come to the basic conclusion that the universe is fine-tuned to support life. And if it would deviate in any direction, there would be no life at all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast. If you are wanting to grow in your faith, you have come to the right place.
Amen.
Here we are trying to coach you up. We want to challenge you to think for yourself, to make your faith your own. And the only way you can do that is by honestly thinking through it and learning how to think for yourself, not just to listen to someone else and parrot back what they say. So if you're ready to learn and grow and understand why you believe what you believe, you've come to the right place. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the salty pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peake.
Welcome, everybody. Glad you're here. I said a quote from Carl Jung, one of the fathers of modern day psychology, on Sunday, and I'd like to share it with the salty crew. And that's simply, he said, thinking is difficult, so let the herd pronounce judgment. And that was his way of saying is that a lot of people don't want to think for themselves. They just kind of follow the herd.
Yes.
And I think the problem with that is you become a sheeple, and that's not good. That is not a good thing to be, particularly in today's day and age. If you want to be able to navigate what's going on, you need to think for yourself. So that's what we're all about, and we want to help you grow in your faith, and we want you – you know, personal development. That's you want to grow, and your faith grows, and they kind of run, you know, in conjunction with one another. That's what's so important. And so we love that what you're doing. We love that the Salty Pastor is growing and our engagement is growing. And so please jump over to YouTube, and you can like and subscribe over there on our Salty Pastor channel. And then pretty soon our Salty Pastor website is going to be launching.
Yes.
Love for you to go there. Just check it out. Send friends there, kind of bookmark it. You can go back, check up on new things. It's going to be just a really great repository for all these different types of things that help people grow in their faith. One of the things that I'm excited about it is you'll be able to go and look up passages of Scripture and see, oh, I wonder if the Salty Pastor did an episode on this passage of Scripture in the past. And then you can go back and listen to it. So that'll be kind of cool. And I'm hoping we'll be able to do a lot more with it. So we need your help, and we'd love your participation, and let's keep going.
Yeah, we are wanting to create a space, whether in the podcast or through the website, where you are resourced to be able to think for yourself, to start working on your faith, to really be coached up in it. And we want to provide that in a lot of different avenues, and the website will be one of those ways. We're going to expand how the Salty Pastor is doing that. Speaking of expanding, we've been growing kind of at a slow and steady pace here on the Salty Pastor.
Yes.
People have been kind of sharing word of mouth. That's all we really do advertising-wise, is just sort of people sharing with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And but this new series has whipped some people up into a bit of a frenzy, and we've gotten more engagement on the last couple episodes than I think any other episode we've ever posted, and we're almost up to 400 at this point.
Yeah, it's been a lot, yeah.
And we had some people firing out some shots, so do you want to talk about what that was like for you, Pastor?
Oh, I just thought it was interesting that, you know, we've done so many episodes, nobody really cares, but then you start to talk about rational proofs, then we get all these comments, you know, and a lot of these people they throw shots, and they just say a lot of stuff. I call them the internet trolls, you know. What's so interesting to me is how none of their comments are rational comments.
I don't know if you've ever existed on the internet at all, Pastor, but 95% of the garbage that goes out into the internet is not rational.
It's so interesting to me. I always thought, I tried to answer a few of them, and I was just like, well, you know, the point of a proof, you know, an argument is that you have to rationally interact with it, and then you have to rationally say why it is or isn't true. Mm. But nobody does that. And I just thought that was so fascinating to me. One weird comment was, this is a bunch of, I can't remember, some Frenchy language. And then he said, it's all been debunked. And what I just laughed about that and said, well, no, it hasn't. It's the exact opposite is true. Is that it's not only not been debunked, it's gaining steam. You know, it's kind of like, I mean, those comments remind me of the comments of those people who say, well, communism is awesome. It just hasn't ever been tried properly yet. I'm just like, you really are an irrational person. And so I understand we deal with irrationality all the time. And that, of course, is proving my point in this entire series, is that the people who are irrational, the people who are crazy, the people who aren't really investigating the facts and the proof and the scientific evidence are the atheists, materialists, and secular humanists. It is a religion to them. And there's no amount of truth that's going to change their mind because their belief is irrational. And so you can't rationally talk them out of it. But that's okay. My biggest concern is this, is I'm just sick and tired of Christians putting up with these lunatics running around saying, you guys, your faith is irrational. Faith is always irrational. You can't be rational and reasonable and have faith. Those are oxymorons. And I'm like, well, first of all, you don't even know what a designation moron means or where it comes from. This actually came from the first psychologist in the early 1900s. And it was a designation of people who had an IQ of between 50 and 74. So that was considered, it came from the Greek word morose, which meant dull. So it's not like you're like completely dumb, you know, or mentally challenged. It's, you know, low IQ. It's, you have an IQ enough to function, but you're not very, so that's what a moron is. And the only contradiction here is what you're saying and what you're doing. And your behavior has to change. I'm tired of people saying this about people of faith. The most brilliant people, the greatest geniuses in the history of our intellectual development were all theists. And so to argue otherwise is just plain ignorance. And so that's why I'm doing this series. Well, that's why I'm sticking up for the average follower of Christ and saying that sometimes you need to hear that your faith is the most rational thing in the world today.
Yeah, it's helping you grow strong, right? Like you want to not just be physically strong, you want to grow your spiritually strong, right?
Yes.
Like, and so this is a challenge for that. We spend a lot of time in Weeds in My Garden focusing on how do we become emotionally or mentally aware of where we're at as far as things like that. This mm-hmm. is a different strength growing exercise where it's saying,
correct,
you can stand up for your faith. You don't have to just sit there and take the arguments or even believe them. Because, I mean, sometimes yeah. you just go, well, I mean, everyone's saying it, so there's probably some science that's proving it. And what you're doing is saying, no, there's not.
There's not.
In fact, the science says the opposite. And
yes.
they're just, and I've been reading A Case for a Creator as we've been preparing to go into this.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks to all of these different levels of philosophers and scientists and stuff, and they're like, and this book's not necessarily new,
correct,
but even at the time they were like, yeah, a lot of these arguments that have been sitting in textbooks forever
mm-hmm.
were debunked by scientists themselves a long time ago, and they're just still in there
yeah.
because they don't want to put in what the opposite or what the alternative, which is the more rational and scientifically conclusive,
correct,
option is, which is there is a designer to this universe, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so they kind of dive into that.
Yep. And that's why the rational proofs are such a big deal. The key in our series is not so much to persuade atheists or materialist scientific humanists, etc. The point is to show that their accusations that faith is irrational is completely false. We want to retake the ground, the intellectual ground on which Western civilization was built. And that is, we want to reaffirm the rational conclusions of our founding fathers that started this great experiment we call the United States of America. And I think the most important thing is that the purpose of this series is to let you know that what you believe is true, it's been tested, it's been challenged, and it always wins. You know, when I was growing up, I used to hear this all the time. You need to have a strong mind, a strong body, and a strong soul. And what's so interesting is that we focus a lot on the strong body part, but the strong soul and the strong mind is left behind. And I think that's one of the reasons why the younger generation struggles so much, is because the society in which they live is so busy being anti-God that they're sacrificing the health and well-being of young people on the altar of their religion.
Yeah, I think just really being scientifically open to what does the evidence really say,
yeah.
And stop. And I mean, in reading that book, you see so many things where they're like, well, we don't know why this is, like, we haven't found any proof that this is what happens, but we just assume, like, Darwin was famous for saying this, right?
Yes.
Where he's like, well, I haven't actually found proof that proves evolution yet, but I'm sure some point we will.
And there's it's so 100 many, years later,
and they
and
still
it haven't. Happened.
In
150
fact, they
years
found
later.
More evidence showing, yeah, that's not what happened.
That's not what happened.
But
yeah.
They're still holding out for this, right? And so
correct.
We've been going through all these different proofs that I think have just really been unlocking our minds of mm-hmm. going, hey, we need to really be doing the research ourselves, not just taking what people or textbooks are saying, even at this point, which is a hard thing to kind of swallow of, mm-hmm. hey, the textbooks that everyone's learning off of may not be accurate.
Right.
That's a hard pill.
Yeah.
But really spending time to figure it out for yourself. And I just want to kind of recap the two proofs we've done before we move on to our third.
Okay.
Number one was the moral argument, and mm-hmm. you can kind of check me on this and make sure I'm doing it right. I'm going to try to do this without the outline you gave me, my cheat sheet. So we'll see if I've
no
been paying attention.
Let's see.
So if there is no God, then there are no more objective morals, right?
Yes, or duties.
Or duties. Mm-hmm. But there are moral objectives and duties.
No, there are objective morals and duties. The key word in it is objective.
There are objective morals and duties. Therefore, there must be a God.
Yeah.
Because those things exist. And then the second one that you went through this last week was the cosmological argument, or
yes.
the first cause argument,
mm-hmm.
which is basically everything that exists has a beginning or a cause.
Mm-hmm.
The universe exists. Therefore, the universe must have a cause or a first cause, right?
Yes, yes. That's very, very close. 90% of the way there. It says,
hey, that gets you a degree at this point. So
that's
I'm
right.
Fine with that.
It's everything that begins to exist has a cause.
Okay.
And so the universe began to exist.
Therefore,
the universe has a cause. Something had to cause it to begin.
Okay.
So that's really the point.
So, we're diving into a new proof today. Is this one as abstract as the last two, or what? How complex? How much weightlifting? How much stretching do I need to put on my brain before we go into this one?
I think this one's a little more concrete. It makes a little more sense. It's kind of like a it's not built on the second cosmological argument proof. But it's like a cousin to it. It's linked to it. But it's a little bit more concrete, and it basically goes like this, and it has to do with the fact that what everybody is saying scientifically right now, particularly cosmologists and physicists, is that the universe cannot exist unless it was incredibly finely tuned.
The universe or Earth, like life on Earth?
The universe.
Okay.
Yeah. If the universe wasn't finely tuned, there would be no Earth.
Right.
So it's even... So it goes even further back, and basically it works like this. It says, the fine-tuning of the universe for life can only be a result of physical necessity, chance, or design. Now, this proof is basically the notion that cosmologists, astrophysicists, leading thinkers have all come to the basic conclusion that the universe is fine-tuned to support life. And if it would deviated in any direction, there would be no life at all, right? And what's interesting is that there's only three ways that this could have occurred. And we'll talk about those in a second. Physical necessity, chance, or by design. A designer did it. The second premise is this. Fine-tuning of the universe for life cannot be due to necessity or chance. And this has to do with when you start to study the probability of chance
right.
producing this result, or the probability of physical necessity producing the result, it's impossible, right?
Right, and that's what I'm seeing in that book. They're just talking about. They're like, the likelihood of us coming out of some miraculous, and they break down all these different things, not just the universe, but just even on Earth, like us coming up from the sludge or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like to even create the first cell to even start the process of doing all these other things is so improbable that it's like, then you want to say, oh, and then it happened hundreds and thousands more times to get you to.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yes.
It's just absolutely insane. So the conclusion is, therefore, the universe has a designer.
Okay.
It didn't come into existence. So that's basically.
So to repeat, it's the fine-tuning of the universe for life can only be a result of physical necessity, mm-hmm. chance, or design. Part two of this proof then basically slams that down and says fine-tuning of the universe for life cannot be due to necessity or chance, which we're seeing in all the science.
Yes.
That's highly improbable. And therefore, the universe has a designer.
Correct.
Okay. So that feels like you said, this one's a little more concrete. Basically, hey, we exist, and the universe is able to sustain life, and there's only a couple ways that could have happened, but science is saying that two of them, of the three, don't make sense. Therefore, the third one must be logically and rationally the only other option.
Yeah.
If you talk to some scientists today, they will disagree with you on that, but...
Well, they reject the option, and the reason why is because, what talks about the fact that the universe has a designer? Well, the Bible does.
Right.
And they don't want to accept that. In John chapter 1, Gospel according to John, verse 1, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God." Listen to verse 3. "All things came into being through him, and apart from him, not even one thing came into being that has come into being." So there you have it. Did I get it clearer than that?
Right.
In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 4, it says, "For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God." Genesis 1, the whole, the first book in the library called the Bible, in the first chapter, the first verse begins with this statement: "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." In Isaiah chapter 48, beginning with verse 12, it says, "Listen to me, Jacob, Israel, I called. I am he. I am the first. I am also the last. Assuredly, my hand founded the earth, and my right hand spread out the heavens. When I call them, they stand together." So there's no question that the Old Testament books and the New Testament books that make up the Bible state specifically that God is the designer of the universe. So if that's true, let's work backwards on the proof, okay? As we work backwards on the proof, there is a designer. That's a conclusion. The Bible affirms this. The second is the universe is finely tuned to support life. Sentient life. And I could explain this, but I have a video about the fine tuning that talks about the stuff around it. I want you to listen to it. It's about 2.5 minutes long, so let's play it.
From galaxies and stars, down to atoms and subatomic particles, the very structure of our universe is determined by these numbers. These are the fundamental constants and quantities of the universe. Scientists have come to the shocking realization that each of these numbers has been carefully dialed to an astonishingly precise value, a value that falls within an exceedingly narrow, life-permitting range. If any one of these numbers were altered by even a hair's breadth, no physical, interactive life of any kind could exist anywhere. There'd be no stars, no life, no planets, no chemistry. Consider gravity, for example. The force of gravity is determined by the gravitational constant. If this constant varied by just 1 in 10 to the 60th parts, none of us would exist. To understand how exceedingly narrow this life-permitting range is, imagine a dial divided into 10 to the 60th increments. To get a handle on how many tiny points on the dial this is, compare it to the number of cells in your body.
The same
or the number of seconds that have ticked by since time began.
Same number.
If the gravitational constant had been out of tune by just one of these infinitesimally small increments, The universe would either have expanded and thinned out so rapidly that no stars could form and life couldn't exist, or it would have collapsed back on itself with the same result. No stars, no planets, and no life. Or consider the expansion rate of the universe. This is driven by the cosmological constant. A change in its value by a mere one part in 10 to the 120th parts would cause the universe to expand too rapidly or too slowly. In either case, the universe would, again, be life-prohibiting. Or another example of fine-tuning. If the mass and energy of the early universe were not evenly distributed to an incomprehensible precision of one part in 10 to the 10 to the 123rd, the universe would be hostile to life of any kind. The fact is, our universe permits physical, interactive life only because these, and many other numbers, have been independently and exquisitely balanced.
What's really interesting is then he starts to quote various physicists. For instance, he quotes Sir Martin Rees, astronomer of the Royal of Great Britain, professor of cosmology and astrophysics at Cambridge. And he says, wherever physicists look, they see examples of fine-tuning. Stephen Hawking, who even he doesn't, has tried to wiggle out that there is, that God is the designer. He says this: the remarkable facts is that these values of these numbers seem to have been finely adjusted to make possible the development of life. David Deutsch, physicist at University of Oxford, he states, if anyone claims not to be surprised by the special features the universe has, he is hiding his head in the sand. These special features are surprising and unlikely. It's just interesting. In that little video, now, if you're just listening on Spotify and you're not watching, you know, they show in the video a bunch of these numbers that are coming up. And what's interesting is you take the number of seconds, right, from the beginning of time, and that's the same number that they're talking about that has to hit exact. So you take all the seconds from the beginning of time, and then you say the creation had of the universe has to be finely tuned to land on 1 second of all of those seconds. Otherwise, there would be no life. That to me is one of the most fascinating comparisons that you can make, because what it does is it shows you that when, and this is one thing that the general public does, is that mathematicians and physicists and stuff, they're always reluctant to say the word impossible, because there is, you know, this infinite probability that you do math with that says da 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 maybe, but it's so improbable, it's impossible.
Right.
And the bottom line here is when you see these numbers, you see this stuff, you realize that it's impossible for the universe to exist unless it was incredibly finely tuned.
Yeah, I think, I mean, even as I'm reading that book, I'm hearing you talk about it, watching this video, like a lot of these things didn't all even happen at the exact same time, right? Like the Big Bang happened or whatever.
Yeah.
The universe starts expanding. At some point, Earth forms, right? And then you have to go through a whole series of here's more and more seemingly improbable things to happen over and over and over and over again. You, like, you have to hit the lottery basically every pull over hundreds of thousands of millions of things to go right in order to
It's impossible.
Get to where we are.
And so, impossible.
Yes, while it is theoretically possible, it is so improbable that all of those things would happen. Yeah. All in the right order, all at the right time, and not be by design, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's fascinating is you just keep looking at all this research of even the way our galaxy is formed and the exact position that our solar system is in on the arm of the galaxy had to be at a right angle to be able to even, like, it's just absolutely crazy. And the video ends up going through to explain basically options of how or what caused the universe.
What could have caused it to be so finely
tuned. And they basically go into the same three options.
Yeah, there's only three.
That you talked about in your proof, which are physical necessity, chance, or a designer.
Yeah, and I think the reason why people affirm the second premise that it couldn't be finely tuned due to physical necessity or chance is because those options are irrational. And the first one goes like this. The argument of physical necessity goes like this. There must be order. In other words, you have to have it finely tuned in order for something to exist. Something exists.
So this is like a subproof that you're going through right now.
Yeah, this is the argument of necessity.
Okay.
Okay. There must be order for something to exist. Something exists. Therefore, order is necessary for it to exist. So you're like, okay, but that is arguing in a circle. Because what you're saying is that...
Chicken and egg.
Yeah.
You're in a chicken and egg.
It doesn't
loop at
answer
that point.
The question. It's circular reasoning when you're asking the question is, well, okay, in order for something to exist, it has to be finely tuned. It's finely tuned. Therefore, finely tuning had to exist in order for it to be finely tuned. Okay, you just start speaking in a circle,
right?
And you hit the infinite regression paradox, which goes over and over. That's circular reasoning. The probability of non-life-supporting universes to exist is so much greater than the probability of one that supports life existing. And this is where mathematics is so phenomenal, in that mathematics, you can just run all these scenarios and you can look at what's the probability if their physical necessity could create intrinsically create something like that and fine tune it before it starts. What you're saying is that the thing has to exist in order to influence its creation to exist. And it says, well, what would happen, even if that were probable, which it's not, but even if it was, it wouldn't work because the probability always says you would create something that it wouldn't, life could
a non-life sustaining place. Yeah.
So,
and we see examples of that across the universe already, that there's already so many non-life supporting options, right?
Yeah, which gets, well, and that begs the question that you asked earlier, says, well, it's not just that the universe had to start in the Big Bang with everything perfectly, right, and fine-tuned, but then that particular solar system has to be fine-tuned, and then that Earth environment has to be finely tuned, and then life on that, in that atmosphere has to be finely tuned, and what
and
they're realizing
the
is that...
And then life has to grow at a specific, you know, it has to be all put together in a way that will continue to...
Yeah, it's just insane when you start to think. It melts your brain. And so when I was younger, you know, the hope was, oh, we're going to find life because the probability is there's life on another planet somewhere because the universe is so big. And now all the cosmologists out there are saying, yeah, the probability that there's other life is probably non-existent.
Yeah.
That's how crazy it's gotten. And what has taught them this, right? Math. When you start doing the math, which leads us to the second one, is that the universe couldn't have come together by chance. And this is where mathematical probability is so powerful, is because the probabilities involved are beyond the capacity of chance to bring them about. And, for instance, the biggest thing that's happening right now, and I kind of made a little mention of this last week, is that there's this notion of called the multiverse, right? Multiverse has become
not just in Marvel, but like in science as well.
In science, there's a lot of people that are trying to say, oh, there's something that's pumping out multiple universes constantly, right? And so there is a machine, or there's something that pumps out universes. And eventually, it's going to pump out one that could sustain life. This is the concept of chance. Okay, well, that means that the universe generator is something that would have to be finely tuned in order to cause it to pump out new universes to be formed.
Because it has to be sustain constantly pumping out universes.
Yeah, and of course, this is an infinite regression paradox again. And that is, well, it has to be finely tuned. So what caused that to be created, to be finely tuned? Something else. So you keep going back, right, to an infinite regression paradox. And so it just gets crazy this way. And then you hit the issue of irreducible complexity that basically says, you know, chance, and we'll talk about this later on, but evolution's biggest problem that it's struggling with right now is twofold. Number one, you have a whole group of theologians that say, so what if God used evolution to create life on Earth? It's just a mechanism. God still created it. And so evolutionists are like, oh, darn. You mean God has to still be the designer and creator? Yeah, so that's a problem for them. But the other problem that they have, the biggest problem, is irreducible complexity.
Mm.
In other words, there are some things that are so complex, they cannot be built step by step by step. Someone has to sit down and say, well, we need to do this before that in order to get that. The mousetrap is a perfect example. Why would a mousetrap ever evolve in a step-by-step process a spring? Because the spring is irrelevant until you add the trigger to it. And the trigger is irrelevant until you add the bait to it. And the bait, all of that's irrelevant until you have the bar that kills the mouse added to it. So somebody has, that's called, it's irreducible complexity. Mm. And the greatest work on irreducible complexity is done by a professor at Moscow at the University of Idaho. And it's called the fabulous flagellum. And the flagellum is a single-celled,
I was just reading about this.
Were you?
But tell everybody else. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
it's really interesting. And it has this little tail that spins.
Yep.
Right? That propels it through fluids. And you're going, oh, that's really cool. And you go, yeah, but the flagellum is that little tiny tail that spins around for that single-celled life form. And what's so amazing about it is that it's so complex, it could never have evolved step by step. It's called the fabulous flagellum.
Right. That's, I think, just so easy as far as like, just this one part of this smallest thing had to be perfect in order to make the rest of the thing that also has all these things that have to be fine-tuned and planned out to work in order for the whole thing to work. And so it's like, it is basically a propeller, but it's...
Somebody had to design it because it was irreducibly complex. And
the
whole point of chance is this. The driving force that allows chance to produce these complex things is that they have to be developed in a singular linear fashion, step by step by step by step. And when you look at the fabulous flagellum, you're saying, that's not possible. That couldn't have happened. A mousetrap, that's not possible. Somebody had to say the complexity of this machine had to be designed before you ever started to build it.
Right. Well, with all of these, with basically the elimination of chance and the elimination of physical necessity, we're left with a designer. I think that's pretty
easy
to see. So what should we, if that's so easy to see, why is no one believing that?
I was listening to a professor one time. He is the professor of philosophy at Boston U. He's retired now, Dr. Peter Kreft. And somebody asked him this question and said that we don't understand, listening to you and the rational proofs and the rational understanding of truth in this world, why is it that universities, are not propagating this? And he goes, because they're neither rational nor logical. They are now bastions of religious ideology for secular humanism. And that's why you get all this insanity and craziness. And that's what every parent needs to know. When you send your kid off to college, you're sending them to the church of atheism.
Mm.
Right? And so is it wrong to send them there? No, but you better prepare your kids for it. And that's what I did. Because I'll tell you what, my kids and what I want your kids to be able to do is go out and slay the atheistic ideology. Because it's
destroying not the people,
humanity.
The ideology, just to be very clear about what you're calling people to.
but they're so irrational. I follow a young guy named Michael Jones, whose channel is called Inspiring Philosophy. And what I like about him is he just debunks constant craziness out there all the time.
Mm.
He was debating Matt Dillahunty. And Dillahunty is a very prominent atheist. He has a big channel. He makes a lot of money, writes a lot of books, and he's debating him. And he backed Dillahunty into a corner with the fine-tuning argument and the need for a designer or for a cause. And what's amazing is Dillahunty makes a concession and says that basically you're right. It has to be this. I can't ignore the science. It has to be a designer. And then he goes, but I object to you calling him God. And Michael Jones, who's half his age, he goes, so your only objection is the title of what you call it. And he goes, well, yes. Well, now he's opened up to what I talked about last week, and that is once you admit there's a first cause, the nature of creation or the nature of the universe dictates the nature of what created it. And in the same way, the fine-tuning argument is we have a design. And so the complexity of the design tells you what? The designer is incredibly complex. So it just always goes back to the fact that atheists are irrational. They don't want to admit that what they believe is a religion. It's not based on science. It's scientism. It's not based on truth. It's based on materialism. And what they do is they're propagating irrational faith-based claims without any scientific proof.
Well, Pastor, thank you so much. I think this is going to be such a great week because we've had two really abstract concepts, and I think this week is going to bring it home for some people that maybe haven't been able to fully process the abstract ones, but this one's a little easier because it just really comes down to like, hey, look, this is so finely tuned. You can look at so all these examples that it's really concrete, and I think that'll be great. And I appreciate you walking us through it. I'm excited to talk more about it on Thursday. I'm sure you've got more to talk about on that. And we hope you guys will join us then. Thank you guys so much for joining us today, and we'll see you on Thursday here on the Salty Pastor Podcast.
Thanks for listening, and think for yourself.